Hey everyone, Gwen here. Jay and I recorded this episode in person at Podcast Movement, a conference all about podcasting. We heard some incredible speakers and attended some informative sessions, so we're pretty pumped about being able to put all that information into the podcast and make it even more amazing. We chatted about our personal backgrounds, real estate updates, and some of the awesome people we met at the conference. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Thanks to TalkShoe for sponsoring the live podcasting at Podcast Movement 2018. Special thanks to Heal Sound for providing the microphones and headphones to record our podcast live at Podcast Movement 2018. Cheers.
We're here. It's amazing. I want to thank TalkShoe specifically, not just for providing the sound, but also for providing the drinks.
They did provide wonderful drinks and lunch.
They
food
did.
And booze.
Gwen and I feel like we're in Vegas. I'm just taking my drink around with me, just completely open.
I was like, you have to chug your drink. And she's like, no, I'm just going to take it with me.
Just like Vegas,
we're
baby.
Just strolling through the hotel with a vodka cranberry. No big deal.
I have a glass of white Pinot. It's fantastic. But anyway, so we're here at Podcast Movement. This is an extra special solo episode with the two of us.
I know you guys love our extra special solo episodes, and we promise that we're not going to drink continuously through this one. This isn't a drunken mess rambling episode. This is just us relaxing with a little bit of a drink.
So at Podcast Movement, the focus is on storytelling. And it's not just for personal finance podcasters. One surprising and amazing thing has been the number of podcasters that we're seeing from all other genres. There's the crime podcasters, the sci-fi and fiction podcasters.
Health and food and travel. Every genre that you can imagine. True crime.
Fitness.
Sports.
And what we're learning, the commonality in all of us, is how we tell stories. So I think for this particular episode, if Gwen agrees, this will be our storytelling episode where you will learn more about our personal stories and our money stories and how it all comes together to form Fire Drill Podcast.
How could I say no?
Gwen, given that you are more of the storyteller on the podcast, please take us back to your childhood to a memory that defines who you are that will help us understand you better.
I was 5 years old. I was playing by myself on the play structure in the middle of the apartment complex. And it was a hot summer day. And it was kind of muggy, but there was a little bit of a breeze. I was just, you know, playing on the monkey bars and crawling all over this play structure and, you know, doing what a kid does. I thought to myself, I've been trying to learn how to whistle. Maybe I should practice. And there on the top of that play structure, I taught myself how to whistle at the age of 5 years old. And I, you know, did the whole, but then finally I got out this little, and I managed to teach myself how to whistle. And I feel like that's one of my earliest memories, that and borrowing quarters from my mom's laundry jar and chugging like 4 cans of Surge in a row. It's my other defining moment from my childhood, but this is a better one. I think that's a defining moment from my childhood because I taught myself how to whistle all by myself at 5 years old. I did it by myself. And I think that is a very excellent precursor to who I am. I will teach myself how to do things. I will do it by myself.
Gwen, you whistle like a songbird.
Maybe like a drunken, dying songbird.
Sailor. Okay, my turn. Well, you're really good at that, so let me try to open up. I will describe part of what makes me who I am today. And the big part of that is my family. So I grew up in Boston. For anyone who is familiar with the movie Departed, or The Departed.
Boston.
In Boston.
Boston.
That is how myself and my entire family talks.
Not that you would believe it now.
No, I have tried to purposely erase the accent, but it comes out.
Can you just tell this entire story in your Boston accent?
Pack the can, have it yet. Well, when I was growing up, my mom's from Dorchester. And my sister lives in Southie. But I had a friend from Connecticut, and my favorite food was chicken parmesan, but my family called it chicken palm. And one time I was over her house, and we were talking about our favorite foods, and I said, it's chicken palm, because the chicken is the size of the palm of your hand. My whole family, my dad, they pronounce it chicken palm. And my friend from Connecticut was like, no, it's chicken parmesan, it's parm. And the two of us kind of got into a little battle, as you know, third graders do. And then her mom came over and was like, honey, no, it's parm for parmesan. And then I realized my whole life was a lie. And I needed to get out of Boston and get rid of this accent. But growing up, my family is a family of love. My mom is one of 10 brothers and sisters. Her dad died when she was 10, and her mom raised her and her siblings, and one of her siblings has special needs, all by herself in a house in Boston. So the way that she grew up, if she didn't have money for school, for new clothes, one of her older siblings would buy her a new pair of pants to wear to school. And all throughout my life, my family, we didn't grow up with a lot of financial needs, but her sisters or brothers who they did have financial needs, they always provided for us. For example, my grandmother's sister, she bought my laptop when I went to college. Or when I graduated college, someone bought me my first interview suit. My cousin, when she was 25, she was a nurse. She had a great job, and I had an internship in D.C., and I didn't really have the money to live on top of, you know, I lived in Georgetown in an expensive house. And I was working for a nonprofit that it was a free internship, one of those good ones. And before I left, she wrote me a check for $200. And like, what 25-year-olds would do that? But that's kind of the family that I was raised in, and those are my values. So I know I've talked a lot about, personally, supporting family is a huge component into my money journey. And that's why, because I've always seen that done. It's the right thing to do. And I think for people who are part of communities like that, whether you have a close family or you have a close friend group who just, they do whatever it takes and they always pay back and they pay forward, that's what I know and that's what I believe. So for me, if I have anything extra, I will be contributing to the next generation. I don't give my time the way that a lot of my family does because I live way across the country from them, but I have tried to give back in certain ways. So I'm helping with the Parent Plus loans that my parents have. I flew out my little cousin to California to try to get her interested in tech. Took her to my work and all around. She has no interest in tech. It was
that did not work out.
No, we ended up at the pool. But actually, I learned a lot about social media and what 19-year-olds at the time said was the hip thing to do. And that's where I learned about VSCO, which is the editing app that Gwen and I use to edit our Instagram filters.
Yeah, because it's not enough to just post a photo to Instagram and use the Instagram filters. They're overdone, so you need to have a fresh new look. So if you want a fresh new look and stick out from all the rest on Instagram, you need to use VSCO. That's the app.
That is what all the cool kids are doing nowadays. And it actually does.
It does. It does
work. Pictures look better.
They really do.
Yeah, and the engagement's better. I'm like, why do people care if there's a filter over it? But anyway, so thank you to my cousin for that. I thought I was teaching her, and then she ended up teaching me. But anyways, that is why family is a huge part of my story. That's something that I aspire to be. I have other family members who are way better at that than I am, and it's just a huge part of my money story, and it'll never not be part of it.
See, now that's interesting because my family is definitely not anywhere near as intricate and involved as yours. Because you have, like, how many first cousins do you have?
I probably have like 30 cousins.
Can you name them all off the top of your head?
I can name all of them with Boston accents. Just everyone just go watch The Departed, and then just imagine people yelling with Boston accents and like maybe like the faint smell of cigarette smoke and
maybe the hint of some cherry.
Yeah, more like Bud Light, and just put yourself there. Everyone's hugging. Everyone's very funny and loud.
Okay, so
imagine that.
I have 6 first cousins from both sides of my family combined. My aunt and my uncle, they all live all over the place. We see each other for maybe Christmas, maybe Thanksgiving, one or the other. We are not involved in each other's lives at all. My cousin is freaking loaded. He's a vice president for some sort of pharmaceutical company in Atlanta. I mean, the man drives a Bentley. It's all his. He doesn't help out the family. And it's not something that our family really does. I help out my immediate family because I love them and I don't want to see them suffer. And I want them to, you know, live a happy, healthy life. Mm-hmm. And so I, like, help out my immediate family, but it would never occur to me to help out, like, anybody else in my family.
I think this is a huge benefit and a huge boost to where I've gotten today. Because when you have a large family, there's someone that can help you, whether it's helping someone get their first internship or their first job, or helping in a non-career financial way. So my parents, maybe they weren't able to contribute financially, but my grandmother's sister, the one that bought me the computer, when she broke her hip, she's in her 70s, my parents took her in for 6 months and took care of her and helped her nurse her back to health so that she could go off and live back in her apartment by herself because she's a widow. So there's a huge benefit to being part of that, but it doesn't have to be your family. We're very familiar with the author Vicki Robin, who wrote Your Money or Your Life. We just met her recently at Camp Mustache. She has an episode which she recorded on Paula Pant's Afford Anything podcast where she talked about the importance of community. And for her, she doesn't have those strong family ties, but her community is her friends. And she's relied on her friends at times of need. and she considers that a pillar of the financial independence plan. You can do everything you want yourself, but you need to have other people who can fill in the gaps that you don't have.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's what we've kind of done in American society as our family units have kind of like splintered and not everybody's had the close family units like yours. You know, we bring in our friends and our family. Like, I have friends that I would take their kids for a weekend if they needed to go away, or like watch one of them if one of them got hand, foot, and mouth disease and had to go to the ER, which totally happened to a friend of mine recently. We watch our pets when we go on vacation, neighbors and friends. Like, we all form like a little hyper-local community within a bigger community to replace the family ties that maybe aren't there in our direct community.
Do you think that pursuing financial independence pulls people further away from their community in some ways?
I think pursuing financial independence takes you away from your broader community as like your local community around you, like where you are in the physical space, but it makes you a part of a bigger community online in the digital space. So what you're foregoing in the local space, you're gaining in the digital space online. You're gaining this community of people who think like you, who are going for the same thing, who will encourage you and help you on your journey, whereas people who live next door to you won't understand.
Right. The online community, this is something, it's not newer to me, but I'm worried about catfish and Netflix and all of these things I'm learning about. For those of you who don't know catfish, you don't know what catfishing is?
Oh, I know what catfishing is.
Yes.
But, I mean, neither you nor I are dating, so I don't worry about being catfished.
I was worried when I met you you'd be a psycho.
Well, I'm not saying you're wrong.
I still don't know. We're splitting a studio in Philly. Gwen might kill me in the middle of the night.
Either that or the place is going to burn down from faulty wiring.
The place may burn down. We went a little bit cheap.
We did go a little cheap.
It's $80 a night in the heart of Philadelphia. It's a fantastic location.
Great location, but getting to the apartment itself is fine. The bed itself is fine. We've been able to sleep comfortably for the most part. But getting to the apartment, you have to go up 25 stairs, and it's this hallway that's like got this old, nasty, like shag carpeting from the 70s and some like weird wood flooring and wood paneling, and it smells kind of like an old bowling alley, but with like a hint of hobo perfume in it.
And like the 70s when you could smoke inside establishments.
Yeah, so it's kind of like seeped into the pores of everything, and it's just like, just really don't want to breathe it because I can feel the cells in my lungs complaining about the quality of the air. But we've been there, what, like a total of like 12 hours max?
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely worried.
No, and actually, I wouldn't pay more to stay at the hotel.
Yeah.
I have to admit.
Oh my gosh, okay, so for podcast movie here, total sidetrack. The hotel was like $200+ a night. That's a lot of money, especially for me who doesn't have a lot of money coming in at the moment. So definitely cheaped out on an Airbnb. And I haven't decided the quality of the review I'm going to leave, but it's definitely not going to be higher than 4 stars.
I know it's your Airbnb rating, so I'm not going to tell you what to do, but don't be afraid to just, you know, knock a couple stars off, okay?
All right.
Leave an honest review. But anyways, okay.
Back to community.
Power of online community.
Yeah.
Meeting you has been fantastic. We've become friends through this.
Meeting you has changed the course of my entire life.
Oh my God. Let's cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
Cheers. Now, the cool thing here is that meeting our listeners has been even more amazing.
Yeah, because we got to hear how we impacted your life and how we have changed your life by talking about this and recording it and putting it out for you to listen to.
And bringing on cool guests that are super inspiring and telling the stories. And that, we met some of the listeners on Sunday, and that was so amazing.
Seriously, I almost teared up like 4 times.
Gwen's a little more emotional than me. I held it together. But
it's totally true.
Yeah, very true.
Very true.
But yeah, I mean, it's been truly inspiring and weird. So the idea of having this online community, this online family, I really like it. And it means that no matter where you are, you can tap into it.
You know, like when I traveled around the U.S., I send out a note and I say, hey, I'm going to be in this city at this time. Anybody located in there, feel free to get in touch with me and hang out. And in New York, that worked out perfectly because I had a reader in New York from the blog, and she reached out to me. She goes, listen, Gwen, you have changed the course of my entire life by writing about your story, and I need to repay you. And I have a couch that you can stay in New York City. Please come stay with me so I can repay some of this debt that I feel because you've helped me out so much. And I was like, I mean, okay. They're like, yeah, I'll do it. But like, staying a couple nights with her was truly life-changing. Like, she helped me just as much as I helped her And to be able to form that genuine friendship with somebody so cool. Like, my readers are cool. Anytime we meet our listeners or our readers, they're just, like, the coolest people on the face of the planet. And I feel so blessed that we've been able to attract so many cool, amazing, intelligent people to follow us and listen to our story.
And I think the community, for me, it's helped me through the financial independence journey, because this journey is not easy. I know the people listening, they can't say that there are some highs, there are huge highs, but then there are those really low moments where you're like, what am I doing with my life? And am I pursuing something? Is this even real? You know, we ask a lot of existential questions about the FIRE movement on this show, and sometimes we're like, what are we doing? Is this real?
We go deep.
But what helps is connecting with other people who've done it. And the people that we met on Sunday, this couple, they had achieved financial independence through rental properties, which we all joked about how we had our struggles with that. And they're living the life. And kind of meeting people like that in real life makes you realize that you can do this too, and the hard times are worth it.
So people say that the FIRE journey is a solitary nature, because it's all about you and your finances, but it's actually not, because you can't do this alone. You have to have a community around you, and you can't do this by yourself, even though the vast majority of it is all about you and what you're doing with your finances and your life and your decisions. But you need that community around you to bounce ideas off of and kind of be like your board of directors, right?
Yep. So, yeah, we heart you guys. Thanks.
You're the best.
So let's talk a little bit about some new podcasts that we discovered this week that people may not have listened to, but they may like.
Yeah, let me pull up my list real fast.
You pull up your list. I have one off the top of my head. The guy sitting next to me yesterday, he's the host of Vet Story, and his podcast,
like
Veterans.
Or like Papao Veterans.
Well, when you put those as the two choices, no, Veterans.
Okay.
And it's all about crazy, interesting, amazing stories from the battlefield to the barroom. And he talked about how one veteran started this nightclub in Baghdad, and it had instead of a coat check, it had a gun check, and how there'd be like diplomats and there'd be war heroes and there'd be all these different people who would all come together at this bar, and the type of stories that were told in that one location is just fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
Or he had another guy that he lost both his legs in battle and now he's a surfer, and it's just like an incredible, amazing life journey. So when I heard his podcast, I was like, oh, I'm not even connected to the veteran community. I suppressed the urge to say that my co-host was in the Air Force, because I love telling everyone that whenever I was a veteran. I'm like trying to connect with them, which is so stupid. But that's okay.
I mean, it's true, so use that connection.
I will milk that connection, Gwen.
You should milk it.
I'll throw you right there. But anyways, yeah, so check out Vet Story. And then someone else, they had Letters from War, which is another produced piece.
Can we take like a hard second and talk about the song Letters from War? They played that every single Sunday in Basic. You walk into the chapel at the first time at Basic and everybody's crying and you're like, this is stupid. Everybody's got their arms around each other. They're swaying. They're crying. Everything's super emotional. You're like, oh, I've heard this song. And it's fine. And you get in there and then all of a sudden you start crying. You start swaying with your squad mates. And then you're just like, this is like the most emotional experience of my life, listening to the song Letters from War. We'll link to it, the YouTube video of it. But holy crap, that song, still to this day, every time it comes up in my shuffle, I'm just like,
I didn't even know that was a song.
So it's an amazing song.
Wow.
Letters from War. It's great.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, he has people that have come back from the dead, and what's it like from being dead for 15 minutes and then coming back, and how does it change your perspective? So anyways, he's an incredible storyteller. Even sitting next to him, I was like really engrossed, and I'm going to listen to this podcast now. So I want to share that with you guys.
So we went to this women podcaster networking event yesterday, and we got to meet a ton of really amazing women podcasters who have these really great stories to tell. The one that I was intrigued a lot about is called Without Warning, and that's the podcast. And she is a PI. She's a private investigator, and she's doing this podcast about a case that she's got, and it starts... Like, she's releasing it on the exact moment that the case started, where they found the body. And it's walking through the case. And I didn't get the entire story about it, so I'm really intrigued to listen to it. But it's about this murder that she's investigating, and she's, like, trying to shame the people that committed it. Because they know they did it, but they can't prove it. So they're trying to, like, shame it out. And I was like, wow. Like, you can tell that kind of story through podcasting? Like, that's deep.
There's another woman who, her podcast is Congressional Dish. her podcast is from the perspective of a taxpayer and understanding where her money's going, what's it paying for, and how our Congress is helping to, you know, better, or in the case of her opinion right now, maybe not better the situation. So that's kind of an interesting one.
And then one of the other ones that I thought was really interesting was this lady named Chevelle, and she has the Soarpreneur podcast, and that's S-O-A-R, Preneurs. She is an attorney, and she is a very prestigious one. She has written an international best-selling book. She, like, has done it all. She's an amazing, amazing story. And she was actually a teenage mother, and she has done all of this in her career despite the fact that she had to overcome that hurdle being a teenage mother. And so she created this podcast to find other women who have a similar story, or to inspire women who have a similar story, that said, listen, your life isn't over just because you had a kid when you were in your teens. You know, you can do whatever you want. And look, because I did it, and like, it is totally possible. So I thought that was a really, really inspirational story.
So there are four that you guys can follow up with, and we would love to hear, what are the podcasts that you're listening to, and specifically, what are the non-personal finance ones? I know I can, you know, live it up a little bit, because I only listen to something or read a book if it will benefit me in some way, and sometimes I forget that fiction or storytelling or all these things will benefit my life.
Right. Do you listen to any podcast that is not Etsy or personal finance related?
Right now?
Yes.
No. I don't today, but I am interested, and I think it would be good for me.
Sometimes I listen to the Freakonomics podcast if they have an episode that sounds interesting.
That is still brain-churning, though.
It's still brain-churning, and it's still kind of personal finance related, because usually the ones I listen to are personal finance related. Yeah. So the episode that they had Jack Bogle on, and so I listened to that episode. It was very, very, very interesting.
Cool.
But still, personal finance related.
Yeah, we'll work on it.
We'll work on it.
Please, tell us your ideas.
Yeah, so tell us ideas. Give us a shout out to make our listening repertoire expand.
Please help me out, people. I need to live a little.
Help us.
Help us. So I think the last topic that I want to get into here, updates on our rental situation.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So I am going to go first, which I'm sorry, Gwen.
Please go first.
So my home, we may have some new listeners here, so here's the background. My husband and I bought an expensive house, to us at the time, in 2014 in northern Colorado Springs. We bought it for $420,000 as two 25-year-olds. It was a 3,600-square-foot house.
That is a giant house, and B, giant mortgage.
Why?
For two 25-year-olds.
Why?
Why did you do that?
But now that you sort of know my upbringing, that having a home of that nature, the job that I had, it kind of felt like I made it, which... with the family that I have, they don't care whether you work at Home Depot or you're an executive, you're still loved the same. So really, I'm doing this kind of, I don't know who I'm doing this for. I don't know who is going to be impressed by my status. But at the time, I purchased it. It turns out that real estate is unfair, and I am lucking out because of the appreciation play. So in 2018, the Colorado Springs market, while it's not Denver, it has picked up. And the home has increased almost $100,000. So we bought for $420,000. We're selling for $515,000, which is nice.
Freaking phenomenal.
It's
that's
phenomenal.
What that is.
We did put $20,000 into the home. So some of the updates that we made, the home was very 90s and brass. So I saw on Pinterest that you can buy a $15 can of Rust-Oleum satin nickel spray paint. And my husband, he's a professor, so he went, he has the summer off, and he went and just spray painted everything, just spray paint all over the place. All the brass is now gone. It's a nice silver color. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that buyers, you know, brass is a huge turnoff. So just seeing the silver, if it blends in, it's perfect.
Brass is very 90s.
Yep.
I agree.
It is. And then we also did the floors. So we redid the floors. They were red oak, and we had half carpet, half red oak. And then we decided to do full hardwoods in the first floor in the master bedroom and then stain them a Jacobean color. I don't know if it's Jacobean or Jacobean.
What is that color?
It's like a beautiful coffee where you can see the stained wood through it, and it actually looks amazing.
Why can't they just say coffee?
They totally could,
dark brown.
But people probably wouldn't buy it and pay extra for it. But it looks fantastic, and now it makes me jealous that my house is way nicer for the 3 weeks that I own it until I sell it than when I lived there. But it's amazing how this happened. And we paid for staging, which shows that we tried to sell the home 2 years ago, and we didn't have the money to sell it the right way.
Right.
We didn't have the cash. And putting just this little bit of cash in there has made such a huge difference in how easy this is.
What is your little bit of cash?
$15,000 to $20,000. Okay. We haven't added up the receipts yet.
That's a lot of money. That's like, that might be a little bit of cash to you, but that is a crap ton of money for me right now.
I'm sorry. We had a lot of cash saved up. And honestly, I love cash. And why I'm mentioning this is that the house, it went under contract in 6 days. We closed on August 6th. And
you closed 10 days before me, and you went on the market like 2 weeks after me.
I know. Ugh. We're so lucky how it is, knock on wood, how it's been quick right now. But now the question is, you know, we're going to walk away with maybe $100,000 of cash. And we sold with Redfin, so instead of the 3% commission that we would pay a selling agent, we end up only paying 1%. And the experience was exactly the same, if not better.
Yeah, because I saw she shared the listing with me, and I could book a tour right from the app. Like right there. Just book a tour whenever
and
I wanted.
I'm pretty sure they run ads for you too. Like they could run Facebook ads for you or other things and just leverage Redfin's scale. So I think Redfin's really going to take over. And I will definitely use them again after this experience.
Yeah, definitely jealous that you did that because Redfin does not exist in my market because it is too small, a.k.a. not in a major metropolitan area like Denver or Seattle or San Francisco. So.
Yeah. Actually, they're kind of like just beginning in the Springs, so they don't have the same presence as they have in Denver, which made me worried that they wouldn't understand that the market may be a little slower there, but it was totally fine.
They did great.
So now the question is, I mean, we're going to walk away with, you know, I don't want to pretend like this is profit because obviously we spent $20,000 into it.
Right.
Some of it is money that we had paid down. But we're going to walk away with $100,000 almost in savings, in like pure savings.
Pure hard cashola.
I don't want to pretend that I would have put that money away had I not spent it on the house, because that's not true.
Yeah, at that point you wouldn't have.
No,
yeah.
But now the question is, what do we do? And I really want to do the Airbnb thing, and I want to buy two rental properties in the south and convert them to Airbnbs. But now the question is, how much bandwidth, how much extra effort do I have? And I'm hitting a point where I don't want to just burn myself to the end anymore on the pursuit of FI. Like this needs to be a comfortable journey and not a sprint to the end, which is how I tend to take things.
Go hard or go home, right?
Yep. So that's my update.
All right. So my update is that I finally said enough is enough. I can't handle any more drug dealing tenants. So I put the house on the market. I tried to sell it in a pocket sale to investors on BiggerPockets. Mindy, if you're listening to this, this is proof that I do actually know what the website BiggerPockets is. I put it up on the market, and within 6 days, I got an offer, and I put the I bought the house for $82,500 18 months ago, and I put it up for $99,900. The realtor thought that I could get over $100,000 for it, but I just wanted it to sell, so I put it up for $99,900 to encourage people to buy it. So somebody put in an offer for $90,000 plus I pay closing costs plus I pay 3% of prepaids for his down payment. So I didn't even know you could ask the seller to pay for your down payment, but I think it's a thing. I countered with full list price, but his concessions, and he accepted. So they got the house inspected, and I wasn't really too worried about the insect inspection, but it turns out I should have been because apparently the house is infested with carpenter ants, which is not good. So I'll have to fix that before I sell that. And then a whole list of inspections came back, and I actually just got a text message, again, with the whole live selling process. The buyer asked that I put insulation into the attic, that I fix all of the windows to make sure that they open and close, and replace any broken panes of glass, which there, I think, are two. One's a bullet hole, and one just cracked. And then make screens for the windows that don't have it, and make storm windows for the windows that don't have it. But these windows are original to the house, and so they're all custom sizes, and they would have to be custom made. So I'm not doing that because that's a lot of money and time that I don't have to do that. I actually just got a text from my realtor who said that the buyer is trying to ask for everything on the list to be done for code reasons. So they want me to do everything because it's out of code, but the purchase agreement that we did said these inspections said these are not to be construed as inspections to bring an older home into compliance with the current local building codes. So because my house is 110 years old, it's allowed to have things that newer houses aren't, like no storm windows or no screens. So I'm going to fix the small things, but I'm not too fussed about the fact that he had a lot of demands, because if he says, well, give me my earnest money back, I'm done, then I'll just give him his earnest money back and go find somebody else to buy the house after fixing things like the carpenter ant infestation and the leak in the bathroom sink on the second floor. So we're currently trying to figure these things out, but I'm still hopeful that we're going to close on August 16th. And while I would love to get $100,000 back from this property, this house only cost me $82,500 to begin with. So I think I will count myself as a win if I walk away with $4,000 or $5,000 in my pocket after getting rid of this money pit.
Yep. And what are you going to do with the $4,000 or $5,000?
Keep it.
For living expenses?
Yeah, probably. We'll see. I'm hopeful that some of my entrepreneurial adventures will bring in some money. But if not, then that will provide some money to live off of.
This is why I wonder how much of FI is left up to chance. Because what you kind of did everything right. Your house almost met the 2% rule. For those of you who are not aware, it means every month. Usually what people are aiming for with real estate is that your house can rent for 1% of the purchase price every single month, gross revenue. Gwen's house almost met the 2% rule.
Yeah, so my mortgage was under $700 a month. It was like $694. And if I rented out the house, it was full occupancy, it would get almost $1,700 a month in rent.
Yep. So you did the right thing, quote unquote. I did the wrong thing, where we overstretched ourselves at a time that we didn't have the same income that we have now. We did live with roommates, which definitely helped, and we had a nicer house than we would have because of that. But I did things that were wrong, and yet I'm walking away with a big payoff. Wrong, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah.
So it makes you kind of question the whole 1% rule, 2% rule thing.
Well, and there was a lot of things that I did wrong as well. I'm not saying that I did everything right and I got screwed for it, because I definitely did a lot of things wrong as well. I bought this beautiful old house. It's a neo-Georgian revival style house. The architecture is beautiful. The woodwork is amazing. It's got original 100-year-old quartersawn oak floors upstairs. The woodwork is original, and it's like 18 inches thick. It's beautiful. And I allowed myself to fall in love emotionally with the house, and I got emotionally attached to the house. And you can't do that in real estate. If this is an investment, you just need to look at it like, is this going to cost me money down the road? Yes or no? No? All right, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
Yes? Then no, you shouldn't buy it. So I didn't know how much things were going to cost to fix it. Like, I knew that the outside needed to be painted, but I didn't think it was going to cost me $15,000 to get it done correctly.
Right.
You know, like, so that was my own ignorance, that I didn't know what things cost.
And now you learned. Like, last night we were talking about it, and I was like, Gwen, who else can take out a toilet and replace it completely by yourself?
So she came into the room, she goes, oh, the toilet won't stop running. I was like, oh, just go jiggle the handle. And so she went and jiggled the handle. She's like, that fixed it. How did you know? And I'm like, I'm a landlord. Of course I know these things. So, yeah, I've picked up a lot of knowledge. And I'm not saying that I'm never going to get into real estate ever again, but it's going to take me a while to get back into it.
Right. Yeah, no, I guess I'm just commenting on sometimes, you know, you hear people, oh, I retired at a certain age. And then you find out they bought Apple back in, you know, 2005. And you're like, oh, okay.
Well, Apple IPO. Yeah, good for you.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like part of this is luck, too. And knock on wood, I feel like I'm going to jinx myself. I think I may be lucking out slightly with this. It was a headache, though, I'm not going to lie. I mean, and also, I've talked a little bit about, you know, marriage as a partnership. The reason that I'm able to do this is that my husband has a job that he went and he fixed it up for 2.5 weeks.
So busted his butt.
He busted his butt. He did a fantastic job. I can't wait to see him. But anyways, one thing I want to mention with that, I am saying that I could use the money for Airbnb. I definitely don't want to put the money all in investments, though. A lot of people would say, you know, put that right into the index fund or
whatever. BTSAX for life.
Absolutely not. Cash, to me, is king. And I know I mentioned this, but I carry a significant amount of cash, I think, comparative to my net worth.
Nobody
my
hack
age.
Her bank accounts, please.
I know. I've always been afraid to say that, but whatever. It's true. It's true. And part of it is that it's a mental freedom for me to have that money, because one, I don't, when I go into work every day, I don't worry like that. Because if your money is in retirement funds, even though you have access to it, to me, mentally, it feels separate. Like, personally, I've never pulled from my retirement fund. I know you did recently, so I'm sorry, rubbing it in right here.
And not the retirement fund, just from my taxable investment
account. Yeah.
But that's like step one, you know, slippery slope.
Yep. To me, that's kind of like, it's out of sight, it's out of mind. Whereas cash, I feel free when I have it. And part of me, I imagine a different life I could have. Like, you know, we're going to walk away with 100K. I could put 80K towards this tiny house in the South, and I could try to be an entrepreneur too, like you have, and run my Etsy shop and just beast and bust my ass on towards that.
Yep.
Part of me, I'm afraid to do that, though, and I'm afraid to give up what I have, because I feel like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory and I have a golden ticket with my job.
Golden ticket. You do have pretty good. All right. Well, we're getting literally the walk-off music. You know, like in the Academy Awards when somebody's giving their speech too long and they start playing music to get them off the stage? That's what's happening to us. There's two ladies who are going to be recording their cello music.
They're literally playing the cello next to us.
Literally playing the cello next to us. So we have to go because it's getting really distracting.
Well, I'm almost done with my wine, and I'm talking about how I want to just uproot my whole life, which I'm not going to do. Yep. So I want to talk myself out of it right now.
Give me your hand.
Thank you. Oh, thank you for the slap. She just hit me, guys.
It's a love tap.
So anyways, the point of this episode is that we learned that we should incorporate more storytelling.
Yes.
I will share more of my personal life as much as it pains me to do so.
You can do it.
I can do it. We can't wait to learn more about other podcasts and have you guys tell us what you're listening to. Please do tell us.
Shout out in the Facebook group. Let us know.
Yes. And the last thing is that financial independence is hard. And as much as we've had so many successes, there's a little bit of luck sprinkled into it too. And it's a journey and we're all here for each other.
And sometimes things just don't go right, even though they should.
Yes. So thank you, everybody. We're closing off. Let's cheers again.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.